Hi there, this is April Wallace. I'm the Associate Features Editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. I'm here today with a local author, Matt McGowan. He has published two books recently, 1971, which was published in 2021, and North Fork Stories, 2014 to 2022. Hi, Matt. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very interested to learn more about your books, your writing style, your background today. I really have enjoyed 1971 and love your lyrical style and all the dialogue in it. It makes it a really interesting, engaging, and kind of easy read, you know, in a good way. And so I'm wondering how you have developed your writing style over the years, because I know that personally you have a background in writing, but of other styles. Is that right?
That's correct. In journalism, as you know, yes. First of all, I want to say thank you. I don't think I've ever had anyone say that my writing is lyrical, so that's exciting and flattering. I don't know if I've ever actually thought of it that way myself. It all seems to be rather plain and pedestrian when I'm doing it. And in terms of how I process and how I reach that final product, it's really just a lot of practice and repetition for me. I'm unfortunately not the kind of writer, if there are these kinds of writers, who can sort of visualize the, or sort of achieve or execute something close to the final product on the first run. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a lot of practice, a lot of drafts, a lot of revisions, a lot of editing. I've really benefited finally from just getting a little bit of humility, I think, and trusting that editors are looking out for me instead of trying to, I guess, stake their own claim in some ways. That's really interesting, actually, if I may digress a little bit. I read a biography recently of one of my favorite writers, Raymond Carver, and he was edited by a very famous editor at Esquire magazine, a guy named Gordon Lish. And for one of Carver's collections, famous collections, I can't remember which one, it was not the first one, Lish's hand as an editor was quite invasive or aggressive to what Carver had composed and revised and edited himself. And Carver ended up, because at that point he was not as confident in his own career, really, he allowed that to happen, and he regretted it. In fact, a lot of the stories have been sort of reissued.
That's interesting.
That were in the condition they were before Lish's editing. So I think that's not a problem for me, because I think editors, and here I'm talking about primarily 90% of the editing on my work is by my wife, actually, and she's really good at it. She has a very critical eye, and
And she has some practice herself from grading papers.
Yeah, she does. That. She's a writer herself, and she just really has a really critical eye for what needs to be said and what is just kind of fatuous. Mm-hmm. So I quickly learned to trust her instincts, and because I can't really trust my own, I'm getting. On the first run, anyway, I'm getting better at that. But a lot of times, you know, we would have conversations about should this be cut? And not arguments, but conversations. Sometimes pretty intense conversations. I would say probably, again, 90% of the time, I was following her advice on her suggested edits. Mm-hmm. There were a few times where I was like, no, I've got to hang on to that, but. It's just, you know, frankly, it's just a lot of writing, rewriting, a lot of practice. Mm-hmm.
So when you have these discussions with your wife, who is your first editor, and she makes the suggested cut and you ultimately think, like, I'm not going to take that out, does it help you at least to think through why that's important to your story or to your character?
That's a good question. You would think it would. Not really. I would say that it just, I think it allows me to stay on track, if that makes sense. I don't really change direction. I think it's a matter of making a decision about what's true to the character. And, you know, like I said, these are my characters. I sort of created them. I have an idea about who they are and what their motivations are. I have strong opinions about this. And really what she's doing is, it's a pretty fascinating process, actually. But what she's doing is just saying, you know, is that motivation, are those motivations or those actions legitimate in terms of, I guess, probability? Mm-hmm. Would this, I think to answer your question, I just need to be kind of true to myself and true to that character. Does that answer the question?
Absolutely.
Yeah, there was one kind of, I guess, famous between Janine and me in terms of the editing back and forth where it's a story in here actually in North Fork about a couple who's sort of sunbathing on this dock and these two kids come up and splash them. And I have the character, the female character, Archer back because it's the cold water has kind of surprised her and caused her to flinch, and she arches her back. And Janine was like, nah, "A woman specifically wouldn't do that. That's not the right verb, I guess,
not the right action.
Action. And man, we went around and around about that, and I can't remember exactly. Well, actually, I do remember why she thought it didn't work, but I don't want to get into that. It has to do with women arching their backs and that kind of thing. So it's a really helpful, important process for me. In terms of just now in terms all throughout all processes of the craft. So even now with the original draft, without having her in my head too much, I'm thinking about mm-hmm. okay, is this necessary? Do mm-hmm. I really need this?
Necessary or probable.
Right.
Which that sounds handy because when you're writing fiction, you are writing for characters that aren't the same gender as you, and so maybe you don't have the same experiences.
Yeah, that's a great point. No, I do not. I almost reflexively I go to male protagonists to the point of feeling kind of sheepish about it, actually, because that point of view has been is pretty, I think, tired. Although recently we're getting so much more diversity in point of view, you know, mm-hmm. So of course that's really good. But on the other hand, I cannot write about things that I don't know about.
Right.
I can only write about what I know. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, I have several characters who are female point of view or women or girls. Mm-hmm. Thinking about one in here about these two little girls are on this, or this little girl who's on she's probably about 10 years old, on a cross-country trip with her family. And a lot of that is, I think is authentic because I had that experience as myself, even though I was a boy. I think there are some universal human experiences, okay? You don't have to, you know, you can write from that point of view because it's just a human point of view. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I think, a little bit more authentic because a lot of that story was given to me over the years by my mother, who's, I'm pretty close to her, and I can hear her voice. And I think there's some, maybe that lends some authenticity there too.
Right, because you've seen it from her view, sure. Essentially.
Well, and she's told me the story 25 times.
So you know it very well.
Finally put it on paper and exercise it.
All right, I like it. And so, yeah, it's so from the point of childhood, not necessarily from boyhood.
Correct.
Is the difference. So in 1971, the main characters are Bud, a boy who's been abandoned by his stepmom, on kind of the doorstep of Herschel, and they have a special relationship. How did these characters come about? Like, when did they arrive for you? And, you know, what made them stick around in your mind before you put them on paper?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great question. When did they arrive for me? I like the way you put that. Well, that relationship arrived in 1967, the year I was born. It arrived many, many years ago. That character arrived in a different story. And I think it's actually the same story. That story started out as a short story, and then it turned into a novel. But that relationship between Bud and Herschel, that was, I think it's fair to say that was based on my relationship with my paternal grandfather, who was really, I was kind of his favorite. He wanted me to be with him all the time, and he was a farmer. And I used a lot of that. So that relationship arrived a long time ago.
So some elements of your own experience.
Of course.
Then? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense to me as a reader with the way that you write about being on the farm. It's as if you have had these experiences. So.
I had back then, yes. Mm-hmm. Some of that is not deep truth because I left the farm, so to speak, when I was probably 7 or 8. You know, my dad grew up on a farm, but they were not farmers. So we didn't, I was just playing around on the farm as a kid. But I remember a lot of the life about it, the animals, the origin of life and death, things like that. Just a lot of the hard work, watching my grandfather. And that was sort of internalized. Mm-hmm. Those are developmental years, as you know. And so I have a lot of memories from that time. So that seems to be an inspiration, I guess, for it is certainly for this story of this relationship, but for a lot of my stories.
Mm-hmm. And so in the short story, how does that differ from what you turned it into for your book? Mm. What was it initially?
I just didn't know how to finish the short story. And that's a chronic problem. I'm dealing with that right now with something else. That is some of it. That I just, I sat down to finish it and didn't. And just, wrote another day's worth. And then the next day I sat down to finish it and wrote another day's worth. And then at some point, I'm kind of opening my eyes to the realization that this is a long story.
Mm-hmm.
And not a short story. It's a novel-length story. So
I like that it has revealed itself to you as that.
Yeah, that's a great point and a nice observation. That also reminds me of something that I read in that recently in that biography of Carver, that his stories come to him in the writing. And that's very much, when I read that sentence, I was like, I was inspired and relieved and felt like validated, it's because I hadn't heard that said before. I'm sure other writers have said it, but it seems like I've talked to more who said, I've got this idea for a beginning, a middle, and an end. It, maybe not an outline, but mm-hmm. they have this story fully formed, and I don't. I just don't. And I felt inferior or inadequate or something because I'm still trying to figure it out when it's almost done. Mm-hmm. So it comes to me in the writing. It's revealed to me somewhere in there. Very often too late.
Well, I like that there's some mystery for you, too.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. Yeah, I agree.
the way that you write in 1971 is in these brief segments that are easy to take on, yeah. which is helpful for me as a mom. I have to put it down, you know, and go take care of things.
Sure.
But are these short chapters, are those your daily writing?
Pretty close to that. Sorry.
Oh, I mean, do you spend like a certain amount of time writing and and is it that one chapter that you do per day?
Yeah. Yeah. I would say for the most part. Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of things that I like to say about that, about process and habit and that kind of thing, and routine. But in terms of that novel, in terms of the novel, those are in some ways can be viewed as sort of independent stories, that were, kind of attacked on a daily basis, although very often those chapters, there are chapters in there that maybe took a week to write. But there are some chapters in there, especially at the end, that only took a day to write.
Mm-hmm.
And they are short, and they're kind of, concise or succinct chunks. I didn't plan it this way, but they seem to be getting shorter towards the end too. I don't know where you're at, but they seem to get shorter at the end. And my editor said, I like that. I've noticed that in stories recently where the story seems to move faster toward the end. And that kind of does something to ramp up the anticipation, I guess, or the drama.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't intentional, but yeah, I would say that they the chapters for the most part do line up according to one day's
okay.
worth of writing.
I like that about the momentum because I agree. Like if you're going on for pages and pages, sometimes reader interest can drop for a bit and you come back. But with a shorter chapter, like there's another turning point. I better turn the page,
you know?
Yeah. So when you do a chapter, for instance, like one that takes a week or so, are you like writing an initial draft and then editing that one before moving on?
Editing
that
it before
one,
moving on to...
The next chapter?
No.
Okay.
No. The way I do that is... Well, I will spend maybe 10 minutes kind of looking over the last two paragraphs of the previous day, if that makes
yeah.
sense, just to kind of get my thoughts rolling again
mm-hmm.
on the narrative and the flow and where I was headed.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes I'll go in and make a few changes that way. But no, I don't go back and edit the day's previous work. I used to kind of write it, and sometimes I will write that way with short stories because I have more. A little bit more time, and I really need to. I need to really be early on. Be, I guess, more strategic about what should be kept and what should be jettisoned. So it's just all of that is just really has to be so much tighter.
Mm-hmm.
I think from the beginning, with the novel you have and the long story, you have a lot more freedom to kind of wander around, and I know that. So it really sort of behooves me to just keep going, and not be critical or chastise myself for wandering around, but know that it might meandering might get cut out later on. So
mm-hmm.
with the novel, I'll just go straight through on one draft, and then I'll revise. I'll go through the whole thing again.
Okay.
And with 1971, I did that twice mm-hmm. before I sent chapters to my editor. So I'd written it, revised it, which in some cases was rewriting it,
mm-hmm.
revised it again, and then I would send her, at the end of that second revision, I would send her chapter by chapter, as I did that, I would send that chapter
gotcha.
To her and wait for it to come back. And so I'm sort of, when I'm waiting for her to send me a chapter back, I'm working on more chapters to be able to send to her. Does that
right.
make sense?
Yeah, it does. So when you're ending a chapter, do you do it by feel or are you going for like a length?
Yeah, it's more by feel, although generally in the back of my mind, I know that it needs, how long it needs to be. And we talked about, you know, the daily output thing. The thing that I wanted to say, I have to say it, people get tired of me saying this, I think. My favorite quote, as far as that's concerned, is in terms of the daily output, is just one of my favorite writers, Harry Crew, said, "God, I'm not greedy. Just give me the next 500 words." And that meant a lot to me. It's like, okay, I can do that. I can write 500 words today. Mm-hmm. You know, I can write more than that. But I also have kids. I have a job. I have other responsibilities and that kind of thing. So, but 500 words is reasonable. So I have this kind of general idea about how long I want it to be. But really, to answer your question, it's more about the feel. It's like, okay, you know, like I just had that experience this morning. And like, okay, this guy says this, and that feels like the end of that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a end quote.
Yeah. And so you write in your day job. You work in university relations, right, for the U of A. Yeah. And so I'm wondering how this feels to you, like as a writer. It sounds like you're technically like writing in the morning maybe or something and then going to work and writing a different style. Does it feel to you like two completely different things, or does it feel like you're just writing a lot?
Yes and no. It is, the content is completely different, but I don't think that's actually a good thing, because it makes me exercise different parts of my brain. You know, mm-hmm. I'm learning, the stuff that I'm writing about at work is challenging in different ways, because it's science, it's technology. It's just stuff that I otherwise wouldn't read or learn about. So it's helpful for me. It's like a non-math person doing math. It's helpful for me to be trying to, you know, understand these concepts that otherwise I wouldn't go to, as I said. So, and then the process of trying to, as you are, you're a writer, you understand this yourself, like trying to make sense of this in words so that other people can understand. So that is very different than the fiction. But really, it's all about syntax. It's all about a string of words that make sense. Mm-hmm. And for me, I strive for economy. It's about only the words that are necessary,
right,
to make sense. And that's one of the things I struggle with in these long stories, is that I'm using many, many more words than need to be used. So there's not an economy, but and there won't be an ultimate economy at the very end. But it will be much better than the first draft.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it's all about trying to convey ideas, of course. Mm-hmm. You know.
There's some similarities.
Sure.
But
some similarities, but topically, it's, you know, here I'm writing about people, families, love, motivation, intention, consequences of behavior, that kind of thing. And then on the other side, I'm writing about semiconductors,
yeah,
at work. So it's
pretty different.
It's very different topically.
How did you get started in fiction? What made you want to give it a try?
Well, a long time ago, I had always written, I'd always been a writer, that is, wrote something, but it never was fiction. That always seemed intimidating and just intimidating and too big a task. It was scary. I couldn't imagine like fabricating a story. Mm-hmm. But then I realized that's just not how it's, I mean, some people do it that way, but that's just not the way I write. That's not what I write. I think at some point I was just, it just kind of boiled up within me, actually. And I was in grad school and I was floundering around again. And I think I had actually dropped out of grad school again. And I was kind of just going crazy. And I'd always journaled. And I finally just decided to try to tell a story. And it was not pretty and painful and not even a story, but it was, as soon as I started doing it, it's like, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, I didn't have any big plans or ideas about what would come of it. I just liked doing it. In fact, that was kind of the, I'm pleased to say that that's still the reason that I do it. It's for, it's like therapy. You know, it's not, I would, as I say a lot, I would do it regardless of whether anybody ever read it, because it's just the way I make sense of my life.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, it's just sitting down, it's like meditation. Really, it actually is meditation for me.
So now that people are reading your stories on a wider scale, what are some of the responses that you've gotten from your characters or things that have helped you, you know, form your next ideas?
It's some of what you said early on, that these stories are easy to understand. They're relatable, I guess. I've had many people tell me that they can see the places that I'm writing about. So the descriptions of the physical world, less so with the feelings that people have, I guess, but more so with the descriptions of the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
And
I don't think we see that a lot. And it's kind of nice to see it on the page, like places that we've seen.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I can't think of an example right now. A lot of fiction is kind of character driven, and I would say that mine is. But in terms of you know, I consider myself kind of a realist or regionalist, and the place is extremely important. Home is extremely important. I mean, I think for me, it's the thing that's driving me. It's so weird geographically when I get far in my writing, when I get far away from the Ozarks, mm-hmm. I feel like it's less authentic.
Gotcha.
So the character has to be, you know, referring back to Missouri or Arkansas, you know.
Because you've spent most of your time in
yeah,
the area.
Right, right. Well, mainly because I was here when I was, you know, very young.
Mm-hmm.
So this is at, this is what I know again. You know, so a lot of people, that's been really gratifying to hear people say that they can see these hills, they mm-hmm. can see these rivers and lakes, trees in my stories, and I really like that a lot.
Yeah. And so you've done some author talks, and you were at NWA Book Fest recently. What are those experiences like for you? Because I'm imagining, as a writer, you spend a lot of time by yourself and your ideas. What is it like to get out and, you know, talk about the things that you've created that are now, you know, physical and out there?
Surreal. I don't know if I can elaborate on that. It's just like I can't even. It's starting to feel like it's starting to feel real and not surreal.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just a sounds. This sounds really trite. A kind of a dream come true. I never really thought this would happen, actually. So it's just astonishing and kind of stunning and unbelievable to really come up with all the superlatives that I can there. I'm getting more comfortable with it, but I can't believe it's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really nice. It's just, it's so nice to share this with other people and for other people to share this with people and for them to respond, that it's kind of resonating, to elicit some sort of emotion in other people. For in other words, you know, it's evocative in some way, mm-hmm. which is just like that's the thing that's surreal too. It's not only just standing up in front of people and reading a story. It's like this person is telling me about how she related to a character because that kind of thing happened to her. She could feel how that character felt because that kind of thing, some similar thing happened to her as a child or whatever. And that is that just, you know, it just makes me, it just kind of makes me tear up. It just fills me with gratitude to the point where I can't hardly function. it's really been wonderful. One of my clients actually at work, a researcher, such a nice guy. His name is Ben Runkle. He's an agricultural engineer. I ran into him. He's a friend of mine, and we ran into each other at the pool a couple days ago. And he said hi, and he said, "I read your book," and he's read both of them, and both times, you know, it's just so random. He just, you know, he lives kind of in my neighborhood, and he was walking by one day when I was mowing the lawn, and he waved and said, "I read your first book," you know? And
is that still weird to hear?
It is. Experiences like that, just like, oh, did I write a book?
Oh, yeah, my book.
Yeah. And it's just been such an amazing experience. It's really, really wonderful.
Well, cool. We just have a couple minutes left, but I want to learn from you what the difference is between first book, second book, and, of course, if you have plans for the next one.
Sure. Well, let me just say this. The second book was written before the first one, for the most part. These are, North Fork is a collection of stories. I think there's 22 stories in there. Most of those were written and actually published in an inferior condition in reviews and journals before I published the novel.
Okay.
So I went back and I thought it was going to be easy, but when I finished the novel, went back and edited those stories some more. And to get them in a publishable condition for a collection. And that was more of the same process of the, you know, editing the novel. It was in some ways even more intense.
Mm-hmm.
Because short stories is kind of a higher standard, really. So there really wasn't a big difference there. This was kind of the next logical thing for me to go into. And like I said, in terms of, you know, the first draft or crafting the stories, that was all done. I'm still writing, and I wanted to be able to say that I finished the manuscript for a new novel today as we speak, but again, I can't seem to end this thing. And so it was just another day's work, and the way I left it 3 hours ago was, I don't think it's going to end tomorrow either. So this one's going to, it's making me nervous. It's like pushing 110,000 words, and I know it should only be about 70, and I don't know how to end it. But it'll come to me pretty soon.
Right. Are you public with the title of it, or just
no,
keep it out there as third
not,
book?
Not because I'm trying to be secretive or anything like that. I just, I do actually have a couple of ideas, but I'm not sure that I shouldn't be embarrassed about them. One of them is based on an old joke that I had with a friend from my hometown. And I think that's kind of corny. And there's one other possibility that comes from, I like to get titles from lines and songs, my favorite songs. And I have an idea there because really it sort of captures the, I guess, spirit of this story.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't want to say it because I think it's, I think it could be. I think I could regret that.
It's difficult to come up with the right one to encompass your whole story.
With 1971, we had to, you know, I liked that idea. It was actually my idea, and then I hated it. And then I thought, okay, it's okay. And then I hated it and shared it with other people, and they're like, yeah, I think that's good. So I like the writing itself. I think the titles need to be bounced off other people.
Right.
Yeah.
I can see that. Well, before we go, tell us how we can find your books. Where all are they?
Yes. Thanks for asking me that. They are available at Pearls, a wonderful independent bookstore in downtown Fayetteville, off the square on
Center
Street. That's mm-hmm. right. Daniel and Leah, they're wonderful people. They've been really good to me. I've actually read there a couple of times. There are copies of both North Fork and 1971. available there, and they can also be ordered on Amazon.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time. I've really appreciated getting to know more about your books.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, April.